Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. On the show tonight, Anna Sale joins us. She's the host of the new WNYC podcast called Death, Sex, and Money, and she'll share her conversation with the alt-country power couple of Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires, which will give us the occasion to dip into our live performance archives. We'll hear a song that husband and wife team did for us earlier this year. And as long as we're rooting around in the archives, we'll present some live performances from some of the bands playing at this weekend's big music festival, the Sasquatch Festival in the Pacific Northwest. Can't go? Well, you don't have to. You can hear festival stars like Haim and Tune Yards playing live in the Soundcheck studio. But first, a little something for the Led Zeppelin fans among us. Whoops, maybe I should have said a little something for the Willie Dixon fans among us.
You got yawning, and I got funny. Baby, you look so sweet and cunning. Baby, way down inside. Woman, you need love. Woman, you need love.
Yeah, kind of similar, aren't they? Willie Dixon wrote that song, You Need Love, for Muddy Waters, whose recording you just heard, and the guys in Led Zeppelin heard it too, and built their early hit Whole Lotta Love around it. Nothing wrong with that, except that they didn't share the songwriting credit, or the royalties, with Willie Dixon. Or at least they didn't, until Dixon's family sued them. And therein lies a story that will kick off this edition of Soundcheck. It's a story about when borrowing, or quoting, turns into something perilously close to theft. Look, musicians always borrow from each other. Sometimes they don't even do it consciously, and in Led Zeppelin's case, you gotta give them a pass for another of their early hits, Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You.
You know I'm gonna leave you. I'll leave you when the summer time. Leave you when the summer comes rolling. Leave you when the summer.
They credited this song as traditional, arranged by Jimmy Page. They actually thought it was a folk song. They didn't know that when Joan Baez first recorded it, that it had been written by an American woman named Ann Breeden.
Tell you when I'm gonna leave you. Leave you. When all the summertime, summer comes a-rolling.
When they found out, Led Zeppelin did share the credit and some cash with Ann Breeden. But there are several other cases of big, important Led Zeppelin songs where the boys don't come off quite so well. Take the song Dazed and Confused by the American songwriter Jake Holmes. If I play you his Dazed and Confused back-to-back with Led Zeppelin's allegedly original song, also called Dazed and Confused, you might not even be able to tell when we've moved from one song to the other. Listen.
Yeah, I'm dazed and confused, and it's all upside down. My big shoes, do you want me around? Secrets are fun to a certain degree, but this one's no fun, cause the secret's on me.
Will not be surprised to learn that Led Zeppelin ended up settling a lawsuit out of court when Jake Holmes sued them a few years back. So, why all the history now? And I just borrowed that line from a Carl Newman song, by the way. Why all the history now? Because, once again, a Led Zeppelin song seems to be headed to the courts. And this time, it's the mother of all Led Zeppelin songs. Playing behind me now is the simple, almost classical-sounding opening to Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. Or is it? The question of whether Led Zeppelin guitarist Jimmy Page actually crafted this song out of thin air, or in fact owes some credit and some potentially big money to another songwriter, is the subject of a recent piece by Bloomberg News reporter Vernon Silver. In Stairway to Heaven, the song remains pretty similar, which you can see over at soundcheck.org. Silver outlines a decades-old argument about songwriting credits and Led Zeppelin, including this latest twist in the tale. Vernon is on the line with us from Rome, Italy, where he is based. Vernon, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, thanks a lot.
So, Led Zeppelin are no strangers to this issue of what we can, I guess, generously call borrowed material. And this claim that Stairway to Heaven might fall into that category, this has been sort of circulating around for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was only when I started looking at, you know, this case and some of the other ones that I realized, you know, there were some reasons to why it had never been resolved. And so, you know, I went into reporting this thinking that maybe there is something I missed, something we didn't know, something that that had been resolved secretly or privately. And I just rounded up everybody who I could who was still alive, still involved. Partly, it seems like the players involved thought they didn't have a chance. And a lot of things have happened recently that I think made them feel that their chances were a little improved.
So this band Spirit, although they're almost like a footnote these days, in the late 60s, they were pretty popular, right?
Yeah, I mean they were big. The guitarist for Spirit was a guy named Randy California, who got his name from Jimi Hendrix, because Jimi Hendrix had two Randys in his band, and this guy was, you know, Randy Wolf was from California, and rather than remembering all the names, said, "Hey, you're Randy California." it was from these beginnings, you know, in the late '60s, that, you know, Randy California was considered a pioneer of certain rock guitar techniques, and in 1968 they came out with their first album, which contained a couple songs, Fresh Garbage, which has got some legs still, and this instrumental piece, Taurus, which is the one that's said to be similar to Stairway to Heaven. And so in December of 68, Led Zeppelin, ahead of the release of their first album, came to the U.S., and they opened for Spirit.
All right, let's hear that band, Spirit. And the song in question is called Taurus, from their 1968 debut. Vernon Silver, reporter for Bloomberg News based in Rome, has written about Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven and its uncanny similarity to the opening guitar strains of that piece called Taurus. So the evidence, Vernon, is that a young Led Zeppelin opened for Spirit on tour in the late 60s and would have had ample opportunity to hear that piece, right?
Yeah, and the timeline, when you set it up, that first gig where they open for Spirit is on December 26, 1968. 4 days later, Led Zeppelin plays at Gonzaga University in Washington State, and bootlegs of that concert show that they've already incorporated another Spirit song, Fresh Garbage, which was also on the first side of that first Spirit album, into a medley that they played. So, you know, on the Spirit side of the legal argument, they've got two main pieces of evidence. One is they were under the same roof, and that little instrumental song Taurus was part of their set at the time. It was sort of an interlude after a big heavy number in the middle of their set, in much the same way that Stairway to Heaven later would be for Led Zeppelin. And on top of that, they have evidence that certainly Led Zeppelin was paying attention to what they were playing, because it only took 4 days before Fresh Garbage was incorporated into their own work. And throughout 1969, set lists, even those, you know, posted on Led Zeppelin's official webpage today, show that Spirit song was, you know, part of what they were doing.
So they were covering Spirit on their first tour of the States. On YouTube, there are people who've noticed this and done these kind of side-by-side comparisons. I want to play one of those. Now, this actually was uploaded back in 2008 under the title Totally Sounds Like. Here, listen. So that's a little bit from this YouTube clip called Totally Sounds Like, which compares Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven with the considerably more obscure song Taurus by the band Spirit. Now, as Vernon Silver was explaining, it can easily be established that Led Zeppelin knew the Spirit song, toured with the band, covered at least one of their other songs. So, Vernon, this idea has been around for a long while, but only now is it, you know, really coming into what might turn into a legal proceeding. Why has it taken so long?
I mean, this is one of the strange things about this, and it's not unique to the Stairway to Heaven controversy. You know, the Dazed and Confused lawsuit only got settled, you know, finally at the beginning of 2012. So something is changed in people's awareness of the performers, songwriters' awareness of the comparisons.
We're speaking with Vernon Silver, reporter for Bloomberg News, based in Rome. His recent piece for this week's issue of Bloomberg Businessweek magazine is called Stairway to Heaven. The song remains pretty similar. You mentioned that the Dazed and Confused lawsuit suggested that something has changed. Are you able to put your finger on what has changed?
You want to say that, you know, that there's something concrete in the law that has made a difference, but it really could be just the way that music is made and listened to now, the internet, and even before that, sampling. Larry Roeder, the New York Times, had a terrific interview with Jimmy Page last week, where Jimmy Page said to him, you know, that you know, the scourge now, we call it piracy of sampling and people, you know, stealing each other's music for new recordings. And Larry, you know, turned it around on him and said, well, you were on the other side of this. How do you explain yourself and the Chicago blues musicians, songwriters that you used material from? And I think that might be a clue to what's happening, is that the abuses, you know, the historical abuses of the music business are being aired out in new ways as songwriters and performers become empowered through the changes that are overturning all the assumptions about the ways that the music business works now.
Well, now, you say in your article that the legal standard a jury or judge would apply in a case like this is whether the song sounds like a copy to an ordinary lay listener. Now, you did a little on-the-ground research into this, didn't you?
Yes, and this was, you know, I'd heard the same mashup and thought, well, gosh, sounds similar to me, but maybe I was predisposed to think it sounded similar because I saw, you know, Stairway to Heaven on the YouTube clip. So I took a couple of clips from the Spirit song out to Venice Beach in California and did Man on the Street interviews. And the results were that about a third, again, I didn't say, does this sound like Stairway to Heaven? I said, what song does this sound like to you? A full third of passersby said off the bat, yeah, Stairway to Heaven, Stairway.
Wow. So what are the folks who are representing Spirit and the late guitarist Randy California, what are they expecting, what are they hoping for if they pursue legal proceedings against Led Zeppelin?
They say they're hoping for recognition for Randy California. Obviously, there's a lot of money at stake. You know, it's been calculated that Stairway to Heaven to date has earned more than $500 million. Led Zeppelin is reissuing all its albums. They've just started with Spotify. I mean, there's a lot of money.
So, and again, Randy California from the band Spirit wrote the song Taurus, which seems to have inspired Jimmy Page's classic lick that opens the song Stairway to Heaven. Any idea quickly when we can expect a resolution?
Could drag on. They haven't even filed the lawsuit yet. I think, you know, we might see that in coming days. Talking to copyright experts, the key thing will be whether this suit survives an initial motion to dismiss. Mm-hmm. And if it survives that, then we'll probably be looking at talks to have a settlement.
Vernon Silver, you can read his article, Stairway to Heaven. The song remains pretty similar over at soundcheck.org. He's a reporter for Bloomberg News based in Rome, and the piece ran in this week's issue of Bloomberg Businessweek magazine. Vernon, thanks very much for talking to us.
Hey, thanks a lot.
This is Soundcheck. Up next, Anna Sale, host of WNYC's Death, Sex, and Money podcast, tells us about her recent conversation with the married couple Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires, guitarist and violinist, and both of them singer-songwriters. We'll hear about how they faced a big recent life change, and we'll hear some of the duo's recent performance on Soundcheck. Get your tickets for Soundcheck at BAM. Join us for an evening of conversation and live music with comedian and actor Wyatt Cenac, Hamilton Lighthouser of the Walkmen, and the Brooklyn indie band San Fermin. It's part of Radio Love Fest, and it's happening on Saturday night, June 7th, 7:30 p.m. For tickets, go to bam.org/radiolovefest.
And I've grown tired of traveling alone. Tired of traveling alone. I've grown tired of traveling alone. Won't you ride with me?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. WNYC just launched a new podcast called Death, Sex, and Money. And one of the first episodes features an interview with two musicians who've gone through some big life changes in the past 2 years, the alt-country artists Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires. Joining me to talk about this podcast is the host of Death, Sex, and Money, Anna Sale. Anna, welcome back.
Thanks.
So you told us last time that Death, Sex, and Money is about stuff that's kept out of polite conversation usually. We think about it all the time, but we don't talk about it all the time. Why did Jason and Amanda strike you as DSM material?
Well, Jason is somebody who I've heard him tell his story about getting sober and getting married kind of in a lot of different places. But I wanted to bring them both on Death, Sex, and Money to hear about how all of those changes affected their relationship. Mm-hmm. Because my experience has been even when there are really good changes in a relationship, it takes some adjusting in how you relate to one another. So I wanted to hear them both weigh in on what the last couple of years have been like.
Well, now, for folks who haven't you know, haven't heard these two musicians, they're both, they've been here on Soundcheck both together and separately. Jason Isbell, I mean, I would describe his last album, Southeastern, which got rave reviews, as a country record for people who don't think they like country music. But
yes.
So, I mean, but just sketch out briefly who the two of them are.
Well, Jason Isbell started out playing with Drive-By Truckers in his early 20s. He grew up in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, playing with, you know, great musicians mm-hmm. in local clubs. Amanda Shires started playing young, too, as a teenager in Texas, played fiddle with the Texas Playboys. So they're both musicians who have been out on the circuit for a lot of their adult life, and they started dating and got married about a year ago.
All right, let's hear a little bit from each of them. First, from Jason Isbell.
Having such a sweet night, audience is just right, drinking like a pirate dude. Don't want to sleep yet, buddy, it's a good bet, raise more hell than you. Do a couple rails and chase your own tail and talk about the bad old days. Trimmer in a t-shirt, telling me your heart hurt. Honey, let me count the ways. And a big boy busting in, screaming at his girlfriend, waving around a fungo bat. Bass player stepping up, brandishing a coffee cup, tuck it in a baby fat. I don't wanna die in a Super 8 motel just because somebody's evening didn't go so well. If I ever get back to Bristol, I'm better off sleeping in the county jail. I don't want to die in a Super 8 motel.
And a little music here from Amanda Shires. That's Jason Isbell first and Amanda Shires second, the two subjects of one of the recent podcasts in the new WNYC series called Death, Sex, and Money. Anna Sale is the host and managing editor of Death, Sex, and Money and with us here in the Soundcheck studio. So they're both, you know, talented musicians. He has had a somewhat troubled life and she's been there kind of there to kind of pick him up at a very critical point in that life.
She was right there with him through it. I mean, they started dating while he was still drinking very heavily, and she was the one actually who said, okay, you're saying you want to stop drinking? You've told me that twice. Now I'm going to text everybody and email everybody and tell them you're going to rehab. So she drew the line. But the interesting thing was I'd never heard they went out the night before he was going to rehab, and this is how Amanda Shires described that night.
The last night before, because I think he knew he was going to go to rehab. He was wanted to do every drug and drink everything and all the moonshine and all the drugs. And it was crazy. And it was probably, it started out like a cool night, you know, and ended up being the worst night ever, 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 ever. And I, you know, I was, at that point, I was not having any more of anything to do with him. Then he was in rehab and he was writing me letters because they don't let you talk on the phone. And he was said nice and sweet things like wait to see the progress and all this kind of stuff, and drew pictures, and I was swayed.
And she did wait to see the progress, and you know she hung around, which is pretty impressive.
That is, and she said, I mean, Jason Isbell actually said during the interview, he's like, you know, I think she put up with more than I really should have expected her to.
Now, where did you do the interview?
We were in Nashville,
mm-hmm.
where
you,
they live.
You refer to them in the intro as a Nashville power couple.
That's right. Yeah, it depends on how you would define power. But
yes.
But what I wanted to signify there is these are two people who have had independent careers, mm-hmm. who have been doing their own thing, and now they're a couple. And so they're musicians who sometimes tour apart, sometimes tour together.
There's a fun moment where you talk about, well, have you bought a couch together? And then there was like this whole circuitous thing of the arc of their relationship. And then finally, yeah, they did buy a couch.
Yes.
So you went to Nashville to see them.
Yes.
And, you know, in addition to talking about the big question, Jason getting sober, Amanda being there both before and, to everyone's surprise, after as well, then comes the part you were talking about before. Even when change is good, it requires an adjustment. And in addition to being, an alcoholic, drinking, drugs, et cetera, Jason Isbell, by his own description, was a philanderer. So that issue, the issue of trust, comes up as well.
Yeah. When I asked how has your first year of marriage been, that's the first thing he said, that we've had to really work on trust. And because he was a philanderer in a past life, that was his behavior. And he also had difficulty trusting her. And so I asked, how do you manage that when you're both traveling musicians? Because there are some temptations out on the road.
Well, and you mentioned, he says, he has to work on trusting Amanda. Amanda Shires tells you at one point that she had to change her name on Twitter. Why?
She goes, Amanda Isbell is what her name is on Twitter. And I thought it was like, what was this, professional choice or your branding? And she's like, no, I was just getting a lot of creepy messages. So I wanted to show people that I was married.
Right. So she had, she gets a fair amount of attention from her male fans.
Yes.
And Jason's out on the road. And so how do they deal with jealousy?
Well, they talk about it. Listen to this.
I think in my mind, I sometimes just ask them or say, have you been talking to any women? Then some days I'm like, whatever he does, I have no control over his actions. And whatever he does or does not do, it's not a reflection on me, It's the choices he makes.
We don't ignore it, mm-hmm. The fact that there are other people mm-hmm. vying for our attention and that when you're on the road, mm-hmm. it makes it easier to think you can get away with stuff like that. We discuss it, If somebody's worried, we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, usually if you name something, it becomes a lot less difficult to defeat.
Right.
That to me, Anna, is one of the most striking moments in this edition of the Death, Sex, and Money podcast, that idea that once you name something, name the enemy, it becomes easier to deal with it.
Yeah.
That seems like a pretty good philosophy.
Yeah, I thought it was really beautiful because they're admitting that, yes, there are people throwing themselves at us when we're out on the road. And instead of feeling guilty about that or not quite knowing how to react, they just acknowledge that it's happening.
We're speaking with Anna Sale, the host and managing editor of WNYC's new podcast called Death, Sex, and Money. The latest episode features the alt-country artists of Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires talking about their new marriage, Jason's recent sobriety, and you can find it online at deathsexmoney.org. Let's talk about money, because they talk about money, which is in a pretty frank and honest way.
Yeah, I wanted to ask them, you're both musicians, you're both, have been doing this thing for a long time, but Jason's had this record do particularly well. So I asked him, how's it affected what you're earning? My impression is that in the last year, you're probably earning a lot more money than you were before.
He is. I'm not, My record didn't do as well as his. That's just the truth of it. But I am glad that he's doing a lot better.
You're not doing bad. I mean, you know.
I'm about.
Made a good amount of money.
Yeah, I make a fair amount. I'm happy with my.
I had a windfall, I owned the record and it did pretty well and didn't go through a major label, Just went through a distribution company. And so, yeah, I got lucky with that. Got real fortunate with it. I think it's changed a whole lot for us. We're looking for a house. We're looking at houses after we leave here.
So at a time when there's been much wailing and gnashing of teeth in the music industry about how you can't make money on records. Here's Jason saying, I had a windfall.
I had a windfall. I owned my record. You mean he talks about the business side
right.
of it. I mean, that certainly helped.
Owning your own record means that you keep a lot more of that pot when those records are sold.
That's right. And it also leads to having to talk about it with your partner. I mean, you can hear the sort of awkwardness there when you're in the same field and now earning different amounts of money.
Yeah. So they did seem to be quite frank, and they opened up with you, but what didn't make it into the podcast?
Well, one of my favorite moments was I just asked him, okay, so you've got time apart, you have to figure that out when you're touring in different places, but what's one of the good things about the time when you're not with your partner? And Jason immediately jumped in and said, I get to eat barbecue because she doesn't like barbecue, and I get to listen to Steely Dan. And then she was just horrified that he was admitting that he likes Steely Dan.
You can catch the full podcast online at deathsexmoney.org. Anna Sale with us on Soundcheck. Anna, nice to see you again.
Thank you so much.
And here is Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires performing here in our Soundcheck studio earlier this year, January 31st. You can find the full session in our archives, but here they are playing a song from Jason's hit record, Southeastern. It's Jason singing, Amanda playing fiddle and doing some backup. The song is called Different Days.
Staring at the pictures of the runaways on the wall. It seems like these days you couldn't run away at all. And even if you did, what you got to run away to? Just another drunk daddy with a white man's point of view. And I can see you in my mind's eye catching light. Sleep beside the river if we make it out of town tonight. You can strip in Portland from the day you turn 16. You got one thing to sell, benzodiazepine. 10 years ago I might have seen you dancing in a different light and offered up my help in different ways. Those were different days. Those were different days. Had a girl back home and we shared a single bed. When I whispered in her ear, she believed every word I said. And if she didn't believe, she didn't dare give me a slap. It was, baby, I love you, get off of my goddamn back. Time went by and left again. Jesus loves the sinner, but the highway loves the sin. My daddy told me, I believe he told me true, that the right thing's always the hardest thing to do. 10 years ago I might have stuck around for another night and used her in a thousand different ways. But those were different days. Those were different days. And the story's only mine to live and die with. And the answer's only mine to come across. But the ghost that I got scared and I got high with look a little lost. 10 years ago I might thought I didn't have the right to say the things an outlaw wouldn't say. Those were different days. those were different days. Those were different days.
That was a live performance of the song Different Days, played by the married duo of Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires. They joined us here on Soundcheck earlier this year. You can listen to their entire session with us at soundcheck.org. So, we were talking earlier in the show about Led Zeppelin and some of the songs they wrote, or didn't, that have a kind of twisted tale behind them. Well, while Led Zeppelin were writing, or not writing, those songs, The Who were making this one. That's called Baba O'Reilly, although it's commonly referred to as Teenage Wasteland, but the real title is a reference to the American composer Terry Riley, whose electronic synthesizer improvisations were the inspiration for the cycling keyboard sound in this Who song. Now, all this week I've been raiding the old LP shelves for some examples of important electronic music artists from the 70s and 80s, because those sounds continue to influence musicians today. And Terry Riley, who turns 79 next month, is one of them. That's Terry Riley's Shree Camel, an album he did in the late 70s. All through that decade, Riley created these swirling, Eastern-inspired, almost psychedelic works for electronic keyboard with live tape delay. He was really popular in Europe, where both the classical avant-garde and rock bands like The Who became fans. Now, these days, no one uses tape delay anymore. That's all done digitally. But people continue to play with that Terry Riley sound. And last year, that's exactly what Dan Deacon did in one of my New Sounds Live concerts here in New York. An even more recent nod to Terry Riley will be on the next record coming from People Get Ready. Now, I mentioned this New York band last night, too, because they seem to really be looking back at these various electronic artists of the 70s and 80s. And when their album comes out next month, actually right around Terry Riley's birthday, it'll include this Riley-inspired track. The sounds of Terry Riley's keyboard improvisations are still being referenced by musicians today. You can hear a great example of Terry's playing from back in 1975 on our website, and also there you'll see my complete list of 10 classic electronic albums of the 1970s and 80s. Check it out at soundcheck.org. Up next, the Sasquatch Festival in Washington State kicks off today, and yeah, we're not there either. But we did scope out the Craigslist ride board for people hoping to hitch a ride up to the festival, and in just a moment, we'll bring to life some of the more interesting posts that we found there. That's next on Soundcheck.
One, two, three, My baby don't mess around.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today marks the beginning of the Sasquatch Music Festival, held at the scenic Gorge Amphitheater in Washington State. Tens of thousands of concertgoers will get to see live music by bands like Outkast, as well as MIA, De La Soul, The National. But first, they have to get there. Now, if you don't know Washington State very well, the Gorge Amphitheater is about 2.5 hours from Seattle, and that means that a lot of people have been looking for rides. We hopped on over to Seattle's Craigslist rideshare board to have a look, and here's just a little bit of what we found.
Welcome to the trip.
There are 3 seats left in our car.
We ride at dawn, Seattle to Sasquatch, early Thursday morning.
No drugs in the car. Really?
I will be leaving Thursday afternoon from Capitol Hill. If you're cool and need a ride and are willing to pitch in $20 for gas, send me a note and a photo so I know you are not a crazy Sasquatch!
Hey there. I'm actually driving to Pullman this weekend, but going over with a big empty Pathfinder. So I have room to give rides to a few people going to Sasquatch. We'll be bumping good music and 420 friendly.
Hello. It seems I have at least 1 extra seat, probably 2, depending on how much luggage we all have to squeeze in. I am asking for $20 a seat, one way. I've attached some photos so you can see that I am a normal and totally uncreepy person.
Luckily, you won't need to solicit a ride from a total non-creepy stranger in order to experience some of the music that'll be at Sasquatch this weekend, because we've had some of those same acts right here in the Soundcheck studio, like Meryl Garbus, who performs under the name Tune Yards. She was on the show back in 2011 when her highly acclaimed album Who Kill came out. Let's listen to a song from that session called Business. It's Tune Yards, recorded live on Soundcheck.
Da 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 da
That's Tune Yards with Business, spelled B-I-Z-N-E-S-S. Tune Yards is basically the work of Merrill Garbus, and she played right here in the Soundcheck studio. The band has a great new album out called Nicky Knack, and she slash they will be playing at the Sasquatch Music Festival on Sunday. We're also bringing to life some posts that we found on the Seattle Craigslist rideshare board for people looking for a lift to Sasquatch, like this one.
I'm Alex. That's Alex with two X's. I'm a couchsurfing, art-loving photographer. We need some gas money. We have some stuff to accomplish. Eat frog legs, swim in lakes, jump, dance, etc. You may participate if desired. You'll probably be required to contribute to the guest book. This car does not stop at McDonald's or sleep in hotels.
I have an extra ticket to Sasquatch. I am looking for a person to ride with me. I am a male looking for someone that is between 22 to 33. If you are good company, no gas fare will be needed. We'll want money for the ticket, but depending how cool you are, I might be able to give a discount just because we like cool people in our group. By saying, I like to drink and get laid, will not convince me. I could care less what you do with your time. On your time is your time. I just want to be around someone who will be a fun person to be around. But this will most likely be a party atmosphere, so enjoy. Looking forward to meeting you.
That's a couple of rideshare posts from Craigslist brought to stunning life by our talented Soundcheck staff. Back to the music that those festival goers will hear this weekend at Sasquatch. Haim, the trio of sisters, was on Soundcheck last year. They'll play at the festival on Sunday. This is their song, Honey and I, recorded here in the Soundcheck studio. That's Haim with their song Honey and I, played here in the Soundcheck studio. Another band that's playing the Sasquatch Festival in the Northwest this weekend is Houndmouth, a group from Albany, Indiana. They played on Soundcheck earlier this year, and one of the songs they played for us was this one, Penitentiary. Their song Penitentiary, recorded live here at the Soundcheck studio. And that's going to do it for our We're Not at Sasquatch mix. But unlike the festival itself, which ends on Sunday, you can experience all of this music anytime at soundcheck.org. On our next show, author Francine Prose joins us with a Pick 3 playlist of songs that helped her dive into the French wartime world that she portrays in her new novel, Lovers at the Chameleon Club, Paris 1932. Also, Meredith Graves leads the fiery punk band that calls itself Perfect Pussy. We'll talk about politics, noise rock, and yes, the band name. Plus, singer-songwriter and pianist Casey Dinell makes unsettling but absorbing songs under the name White Hinterland. She'll play songs from her new album, Baby, live in the studio. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Katie Bishop, Dan O'Donnell, and Mike Katziff with Amy Pearl. Our intern is Ryan Kyloth, and Ryan is leaving us today. Ryan, thanks for all the hard work, and good luck in Austin, Texas. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.